This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to New Books in Law, a channel on the New Books Network. I'm Nick Posick. And today I'm speaking with Enrico Bonadio, whose recent book, Protecting Art in the Street, A Guide to Copyright in Street Art and Graffiti, was published this year by Document Press. Bare walls become blank canvases for vibrant art that introduces beauty, humor, and social critique into public spaces. While there's a debate about whether some street art is a nuisance or a benefit, it is nonetheless deeply integrated into the urban visual landscape and the identity of a city. Only recently, however, have the myriad of copyright issues surrounding street art surfaced. Enrico has been a leading thinker and scholar on street art as intellectual property, and this book is a succinct primer on this topic. Enrico, welcome to New Books in Law.
Thanks for having me.
We're discussing your new book, Protecting Art in the Street, A Guide to Copyright in Street Art and Graffiti. This book is a fascinating read on an area of intellectual property that is quickly gaining attention. Street art and graffiti are terms that we hear used a lot to describe a certain genre of creative work. We have mental images of works we've seen, you know, either in person on the streets or in the media. But often, you know, we use these terms, graffiti and street art, imprecisely or interchangeably. For our listeners who are, you know, largely legal scholars or lawyers or law students, what do you mean when you write about street art and graffiti?
I mean two different but close artistic movements. We need to distinguish at the beginning between street art and graffiti. Street art is more about figurative artworks with lots of figurative elements. Graffiti writing, actually the modern graffiti writing was born in New York City. First Philadelphia, and then New York City at the end of the 60s, early 70s. And then it evolved into a lettering art form through the 80s, 90s. And then it, let's say, merged with already existing artistic movements such as muralism. So we need to distinguish graffiti lettering, which is about writing names. See, graffiti writers, that's what they do. They write their names with style, right? Adopting a quite different kind of styles. Wild style, Brooklyn style. I mean, the kind of lettering styles, the kinds of lettering styles invented and developed in New York are so, you know, so many, and then they spread out to the world, I would say. On the other end, we have street art, which is a concept started more or less at the end of the 90s, mid and late 90s. And again, it's a broad term to include not only paintings on walls, the most known form of street art, but also sticker art, wet pasting, abandoning miniatures, objects on the street. So terminology here matters a lot. So we need to put everything in context. Street art and graffiti together, I mean, looking at the street art and graffiti together makes sense when it comes to, for example, copyright, right? Because here we talk about artworks placed, created, and then placed in the public environment, on the street, right? So this is what is similar of all these, various forms of art in the street. They are on the street. They are in the public environment.
Great. And I live in Queens, New York. In fact, we mentioned this just a moment ago. Not far from the former Five Point site you mentioned in the book. And it really was through Five Point's litigation that I, and I suspect many of our listeners, began to think about street art as something that might be protected in some form. With Five Points, it was under VARA. What compelled you to explore this intersection between street art and copyright and intellectual property?
Well, I've always been interested in street art, in art in the street. From the very beginning, one thing which made me fall in love with this form of art was when I was a teenager, coming out of school in the late morning, early afternoon, in my hometown in Tuscany, which is Pisa in Italy, and some friends told me, look, go to this square, which was Piazza Sant'Antonio in Pisa, and there is an American guy painting on the back of a church. So I rushed there, and I saw a guy painting really this huge wall with people around him, mainly teenagers, emceeing and playing hip-hop and breakdancing on the street. So that was my first encounter with street art. After a few minutes, I learned that that guy was Keith Haring, who came to my city and painted this huge wall. Sadly, then Keith Haring would die just a few months later. But that was my first encounter with street art. I was a teenager at that time. Then, of course, I went to law school. I started specializing in IP and copyright. I was living already in Milan, working as a copyright lawyer. In Milan, in North Italy, was a good street art scene at the beginning of the 2000s, right? It was actually booming. Then I moved to London at the end of the 2009 and 2010, so in early 2011. And I ended up living in East London in the Shoreditch area, Brick Lane, which is an explosion, basically, of street art and graffiti there, right? And then I also traveled the world, visited New York, Bushwick, Williamsburg, all these places in New York are full of art. Unfortunately, when I came to New York, Five Points was already gone. I went to Melbourne, Bogota, Tel Aviv, and many places around the world with a good, vibrant street art and graffiti scene. So since I had this background, copyright was my occupation, let's say, and I became passionate about street art and graffiti, I decided to, put together these two passions. And I thought, but, should these works be copyrightable also when they are created illegally? The fact that they are placed in the public environment, does this fact stand in the way of their copyrightability? So this kind of question, I started asking, wondering, about these issues. And I decided to start researching on the subject. My research has been both legal, pure legal analysis, but also ethnographic analysis. So what I've done is to talking making interviews with both street artists and writers, graffiti writers. I interviewed in a few years, I interviewed around 1995, something like that, between street artists and the writers. And the idea then was to, since I also had quite amount of pictures and photographs that I took during these years of research, I decided, why don't I put up, you know, put all together these pictures and publish a photographic book about these issues, where I could explain with both words, let's say few words and many images, these legal issues. Of course, I used a language which is a layman language, is not a lawyer's language. So I've tried to keep it divulgative, right? And to explain with simple few words and many images the main legal issues, a sort of kind of guide, right? Especially addressing a targeted to artists. So I wanted to clarify to make it as easy as possible these otherwise complicated legal issues.
And you really see artists as the target for your book, right? Who did you write this for?
Not one artist in particular, but all the community, I would say, of both street artists and graffiti writers. Because I realized by interviewing them, by talking to them, I realized that, of course, they although some of them are really conscious and aware of the legal tools, but others, I would say most of them, others, understandably, were not fully aware of the legal tools that they could use to protect their art against imitation, against the corporate appropriation, possibly against destruction. Not the 5-point case, it was about complaining about the whitewashing. Commissioned works, who is the owner of the right in case of commissioned works, what is the role of photographs, what about if they remove my mural from the wall and then they take it, they bring it to a gallery, for example, is it illegal or not? So I realized that there was this gap, right, this knowledge gap in the community, and that was a gap that I decided to fill, right, by writing a very user friendly, I would say, guide, short with many images that could help them navigate into the legal intricacies, right?
Yeah, and the book itself is very, very well produced and, as you mentioned, heavily illustrated. So it's not surprising you went with a publisher like Document Press, a publisher that does arts and cultural books, that has roots in the hip hop movement rather than a traditional legal publisher. How did you come to work with Document?
Well, a common friend, I would say, who is a curator, who basically suggested me to contact Document in Sweden. He said to me, "Look, they are the best when it comes to urban art publishing." So I decided to approach them, and yes, it has been a good collaboration, I think, because they have in mind their target, not the audience, and so we hope that this publication is going to do the job for which it was, thought and conceived, to spread knowledge, to clarify doubts if there are doubts, right?
Sure. And you mentioned the book is, very handy little book. It's compact. There's these 16 succinct chapters that are almost like entries in an encyclopedia. Some of them you'd mentioned, others include sketches, ephemerality, commissions, collaborations, the art market. How did you arrive at that selection of topics? Was that a conversation with the publisher? Was it, you know, like choosing your babies?
Yes, no, I chose these sections. I thought, let's divide the book in 16 sections, short ones. So for each of these subtopics or sub areas, I thought, okay, I put together 3, 4, 5 pictures, 6 pictures, depending on the topic. And then I talk about that particular issue. I don't know, originality of tags. Something which is quite provocative. I know I want to be provocative here. I wanted to be provocative. So I inserted the pictures of dust tags and throw-ups, you know, the bubble letters pieces. And then the issue of ephemerality. We know that graffiti and street art is, to a certain extent, ephemeral, transient, provisional, all right? So I decided to put there pictures of murals that are fading, right? Just to show how, you know, these forms of art are vulnerable to erasure, to the weather elements, to greedy property owners, and so on and so forth. And the legal tools that which, you know, in theory could be available to artists to prevent that or to complain about the erasure and the whitewashing. So I thought these mini areas, mini topics, they deserve just a few words, introduction, and then images, because we know that images sometimes speak more loudly than words.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a ton of them in the book. This is really packed, and they're extremely helpful for visualizing concepts. There's also one juxtaposition that I really like. It's a Tilly Kelly painting from 1784, right next to a work from Stick from the 2000s to show appropriation. How did you go about sourcing the images?
Well, these are paintings that Stick used as inspiration, as source, and basically they are in Stick book, so book Stick published a book 6-7 years ago, and in which he explains he published this picture based on the original painting. So what I did is to retrieve the original painting and put them together with a Stick reinterpretation of the old painting. To show what? To show that these forms of art are very much about sharing and appropriation culture, a so-called cut and paste culture, or reinterpretation culture, much more than fine artists. So street artists and graffiti writers appropriate more often than fine artists. It's a really characterizing feature of these forms of art, which, however, in my opinion, does not stand in the way of their protectability with copyright. Not at all. And so I wanted to expand on this topic by putting together the old painting and then the new reinterpretation by a street artist.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at Factor Meals. audibles.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
For the other illustrations that appear throughout the book, I notice some of them are your own photography. Others are acquired from other places. Did you have to work closely with the publisher in order to clear all the rights for these? This would be just, I imagine, a daunting undertaking is preparing a book with this many really, you know, rich examples. How did you go about that process?
I did it almost myself, the clearing of rights.
Really?
Yes, the clearing of rights has been time-consuming. So for the first time, I did so, and I really realized how sometimes copyright could discourage the creation of new works. Because another person may be less enthusiastic, another person less convinced than I have been, would have given up probably. Because it has been, you know, in this case, I needed the authorization of both the artist and the photographer. That in many cases they were different people. So I would say 20% are my picture, but the other 80% are pictures taken by either the artist or, more often, other people, both professional photographer and normal people, not professional. So it has been quite time consuming, but I wanted to do it, so I decided to spend that time chasing artists and, more importantly, photographers. For just a very few of them, we couldn't find the artist or the photographer. You know, think about stickers, right? Stickers in the city, or some wet paste that I found in Tel Aviv and in Japan, in other countries. Well, in that case, I could still use the photo because there are some rules which authorize the author to use other picture if after a diligent search has been conducted. So the funny thing of this is that I used my own experience by saying, look, you need to chase the copyright owners in order to be able to use it. So I used my own case study for, you know, clarifying this issue in the book. Sometimes, as I said, sometimes copyright can be an obstacle, unfortunately.
And what was your source of courage to persevere when it became an obstacle?
I didn't give up. I just kept chasing the photographer or the artist, or if the artist or the photographer didn't reply to me, I would choose another photograph, another picture. I was a bit stubborn, right? Didn't give up, and because I wanted to publish this photographic book, and when I start a project, there is no way I cannot finish it.
And going back to the text of this book, right? These 16, do you call them chapters? Do you call them entries?
Sections, I would say, yes.
How did you arrive at this final selection? Were there a bunch of sections that you had kind of left on the cutting room floor? Did you, did you use a bulletin board where you spread them out and tried to figure out, okay, what are the things that you want to make sure get into this book? What was your process like for editing this and coming up with a final selection?
The main issues when it comes to copyright and street art and graffiti. So the intriguing issues, originality, which is a requirement for copyright, sketches. In the case of sketches, we have two copyright, one for the sketch and one for the final work, which is based on the sketch. The ephemerality is an issue, right? because fixation is another requirement for copyright protection in many countries. So if an artwork is ephemeral, someone may doubt about whether the fixation requirement is met. And then the collaborations, collaborations between artists may lead to disputes about joint authorship and joint ownership. The same with commissioned works, right? There might be disputes between the commissioner and the artist. Each chapter, each section refers to some specific legal issue, to some areas, to some aspects which may trigger legal issues and disputes, right? And I decided to choose the most the most interesting ones, I guess, for artists, the art market, the fact that copyright could be used for social uses, right? It is flexible enough to any kind of use, right? And so on. So I decided to give it this roadmap, let's say.
And were any particular sections easier to write or easier to research than others? Were others more difficult? Did some require more thoughts? Did some require you to really revisit and rethink?
Well, not. I mean, they have been. I mean, not all easy, but. Some of them I had to study, I had to match the picture, the right picture with the section, because of course there must be correlation between the picture and the words, because the pictures help the readers understand the legal issue, right? So matching the two has been crucial. And no, I would say it didn't cost me long time and sweat of the brow to develop each of these sections. Of course, the entire work, even if it's a short book, the entire work took me a while. But for other reasons as well, the chasing the photographer, the artist. But the actual writing up has been the more, the more creative part. And I also like a lot the introduction, the foreword by Zephyr, who is a graffiti legend in New York City, which I think puts everything into context, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Zephyr's a very established street artist here. How did that forward actually come about?
I interviewed him when I was in New York 4 years ago. I interviewed and then we became friends, a very nice person, very nice guy. He was so patient. He introduced me a bit to the New York of the 70s. I mean, I already knew through the books, right? Through the graffiti literature, but the encounter with Zephyr has opened my eyes even further, right? And he made me understand several aspects that sometimes just from reading the books you are not able to grasp, right? So I think Zephyr has been probably one of the artists, if not the most interested, the artist most interested in what I was doing, right? The most enthusiastic, I would say. And this forward confirms his enthusiasm for this book and in general for copyright as applied to these forms of art. Because we need to be honest and say that several, not many, I would say, but several graffiti writers, more graffiti writers, and to a lesser extent, street artists, especially graffiti writers, are still reluctant. They are still skeptical about copyright as applied to graffiti. I respect that, especially the hardcore graffiti writers. So it's not a monolithic subculture. It's a quite, various. I mean, there are various opinions within this pot, within this graffiti subcultures. And so I respect the opinions of, I would say, a part of the subculture, which is still quite skeptical about invoking a property right, right? Because they say we are vandalizing properties most of the time. So why should we rely on another form of intellectual property? This is especially true for illegal graffiti writing, let's say, the bombing at night, let's say. But you know, this is just a part of the bigger picture that I wanted to describe with this book, right?
Yeah, and just for our audience, quickly, can you describe what bombing is, just so that we are clear that it's not anything dangerous or not anything violent? No.
I use the graffiti terminology that needs to be clarified. Bombing, especially in New York City, in the 70s and the 80s, but until also now, is the verb used to describe the graffiti writers in action, especially those who paint illegally at night on the trains, on the train subways, or on other urban surfaces, but illegally, let's say. So the terminology is also very important, because especially for the graffiti subculture, not much for the street art one. The street art subculture is more open to the public, right? Is more appreciated by the general public, while the graffiti subculture is perceived less in a less friendly way, let's say, and a welcoming way by the general public, let's say. And this terminology, of course, confirms, right, the kind of niche area we are talking about, the graffiti, the illegal graffiti subculture, I would say. So you can see that, sometimes these definitions, these labels that we give are not appropriate. It's difficult to give a precise definition because there are several graffiti writers who also do street artworks, so figurative stuff. And vice versa, there are also street artists that sometimes either they come from the graffiti writing experience, and so they keep doing both. The line distinguishing the two subcultures is quite blurred.
And going back a bit, something that's really interesting to me, that you mentioned that no particular section of this book or no particular part of this book was, uniquely challenging, but you felt that producing this entire publication presented its own array of challenges. What did you learn in that process? What did you discover about graffiti and street art and not only the legal frameworks, but also the kind of broader social issues in producing this publication? How did this really inform your thinking?
Well, most artists that and writers I have approached to ask them if I could use their pictures were happy about that. That's understandable because it gives them visibility, right? Especially for the less known ones, right? In the book, there are also pictures of very well-known street artists such as the Black Lerat, Futura, Shepard Fairey. Of course, they are very established, so for them it's not really a big thing, of course, even if they might be happy. But for those less well-known, it's probably even better. So it increases. So that was something which I learned, right? They like exposure. I was not surprised about street artists because I know street artists, they like exposure and visibility also amongst the other circles, other entourage. But some writers here were happy, not to that I included their works in the book. So this was a nice thing, I think. And something which I learned, as I said, apart the difficulties in finding the sometimes chasing for people for the clearance of rights. What I think also, in the other way, what I think this research I made for coming up with this book, what I think this research has done is also to help them understand this issue. So, of course, the book per se aims at increasing knowledge. But in the making of the book, I spoke to artists, right? Because I asked them if I could use their pictures. So I talked about the very same issues which are dealt with in the book. And some of them have replied, have changed their behavior because of the encounter with me. So, for example, some of them, they have started inserting the copyright symbol next to their murals after talking to me, which is something very good. I mean, which is something which I am quite happy about, because it means that my research, my study, has been able to change some behaviors for the better, in my opinion.
So you're really helping artists to think very carefully about this work. And you mentioned other artists, of course, are somewhat resistant to copyright as well. So that's a very interesting thing. What has been the overall reception for this book? How has it been received by artists? And I imagine also many legal scholars are interested in this as well. Have you heard any feedback yet?
Not precise, because I mean it was published in Europe in November, in America December, January. So it's still a bit early to have a clear picture of the feedback. But the early impressions I got were positive of both artists and the legal scholars. Because, I mean, so far there has not been anything like this, a photographic book on this issue. So it is the first. It is the first, and actually it is not my last effort in this field, because I'm working now on a book, not photographic, a normal book, basically what I'm doing is putting together the most interesting bits of my interview with the street artists and writers. So what I want to do there is to publish this monograph, short monograph, where the voice from the street comes out, the opinions of street artists and writers on copyright, on copying, imitation, and so destruction, this kind of stuff. So that would be a sort of continuum of this research, of this photo, from the photographic book towards maybe a more a divulgative, not without many photos, just words, probably a more academic book, but not legal, to be more socio-legal, where I will make the interviews with the artist emerge from the street.
Mm-hmm. And what inspired that? It's an interesting tack to take.
Well, because when I saw all my interviews transcribed, no, and I printed them out, I had 200 pages of interview. Of course, then I needed to work. I'm working on them and to turn them into a book. So I thought, I have this amount of data from the street, the voice of the street, the voice of artists and writers on these issues. I need to give these voices a space in the academic world, or even in the less academic, because this book will be more divulgative, let's say, than with some academic insights, of course, but it will be more divulgative. So I thought, why should these interviews remain on my desk? They should instead go out. And now I am in the process of, putting together these interviews with the other, with other pieces of study I've made. So it will not be entirely interviews, but I would say 60-70% of the book, 65, let's say, will be interviews, and then my considerations, my thoughts, and my ideas around that. Yeah. And I think it will be the first of book of this kind with all these opinions and ideas. So I want to give artists and writers voice and to unearth their opinions, which now are quite submarine, are quite hidden. Nobody knows what they think.
Why do you think that is?
Because nobody asked them so far. It's not, it's not a topic that, which is, there have been cases, as you may know, there have been cases in America, so scholars have started talking about these issues and writing about these issues, also other academics. There have been a few books which are the result of, ethnographic analysis, but just a couple of them, but not with with the necessary opening and not with the necessary depth, I would say.
So it sounds like you are going to produce yet another tremendous contribution to a very important conversation.
I hope so. Yes, I hope so.
All right, Enrico. Well, I wanted to congratulate you on Protecting Art in the Street, a guide to copyright in street art and graffiti, a publication that I've enjoyed immensely and I strongly recommend for anyone either in the legal field or especially anyone who's interested in any branch of art law. And I wanted to thank you for joining me on New Books in Law.
Nick, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to stay with you and to answer your questions.